Okay, so we have time for one question, just one.
Ken Rinpoche, I have a question. It's regarding the Hinayana tenets and the Mahayana tenets. When you were coming to the towards the end of the presentation of the mind-only school, you explained that it was a mark of the Mahayana tenets that they posit the four bodies of the Buddha. Yeah. So I wondered, is that the only basis for positing the difference between the Hinayana and Mahayana tenets? Or are there some other differences, specific differences for highlighting the difference between the Hinayana and Mahayana tenets? Because our group was trying to figure out on our own, and we were saying things like, maybe it's because Hinayana tenets do not posit selflessness of phenomena, or, you know, they posit external objects, but we are not very sure. Yeah, so I'm just trying to clarify what are the basis for stating the difference between Hinayana and Mahayana tenets.
So what I mentioned in one of the previous lessons, one of the things that sets the Mahayana tenets apart from the Hinayana tenets is the Mahayana tenets presentation of what Buddha is. Yeah. And in the presentation, they talk about the four embodiments of the four bodies or four kayas of Buddha. Yeah. I think the Hinayana tenets are not able to make such a presentation. Yeah. I wonder if the mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta, is also one of. I wonder whether it is one of the things that set the Mahayana tenets apart from the Hinayana tenets. Yeah. Not sure if. I wonder if the Hinayana tenets accept bodhicitta or not. That there is such a mind, you know. Whether the Hinayana tenets accept there is a mind of enlightenment bodhicitta or not, yeah. Then about the assertion of external objects and using that as the differentiator between the Hinayana tenets and Mahayana tenets, I think it's not feasible. Because the one of the autonomy middle ways, one of the sub-schools of the autonomy middle way, assert external objects. The consequence middle way school also assert external objects, and these two, and these are Mahayana tenets, yeah, isn't it? Okay. Then, if you look at the Hinayana tenets, I don't think there is a there's a presentation of progressing towards enlightenment by traversing the 10 bodhisattva grounds. Yeah, such a presentation is not made in the Hinayana tenets. So anyway, this is something that requires further thought. Yeah. This is just my, but you know about the presentation of the four bodies, you know. And I would think that this is one of the key distinguishing features of the Mahayana tenets, yeah, that sets them apart from the Hinayana tenets, yeah. Because, and then the Hinayana tenets do not basically they do not have such a explanation of the four bodies of Buddha, yeah. So we have finished with the mind only school, and we started on the middle way school in the previous lessons. Yeah. So if you look at the presentation of the view of selflessness, you can see that there is a progression in terms of the subtlety of the explanation as we move, move from one tenet to the other. Yeah. So If you compare the presentation of the view of selflessness in the Hinayana tenets and the Mahayana tenets, you'll find that the presentation of the view of selflessness in the Mahayana tenets are more deep, more profound. Yeah. And then within, then also the Mahayana tenets, yeah. So there are many divisions, yeah. Right, isn't it? And even within the Mahayana tenets, no, one also sees, you know, one sees also a difference in the subtlety of the respective presentation of selflessness. So all the four Buddhist tenets present a view of selflessness, right? And all four Buddhist tenets are the same in asserting that the root of all our problems, the root of cyclic existence, the root of all suffering is the conception of a self, or the apprehension of a self, or grasping at a self, isn't it? Right? So all Buddhist tenets say the same thing. And all Buddhist tenets say that the only way to eradicate the apprehension of a self is through realizing selflessness. They're all the same, yeah? Yeah. So you have to know that. That's clear? All the Buddhist tenets say the same thing with regards to what is the root of all our problems, which is the apprehension of a self. And the solution, the only antidote to the apprehension of a self is to realize, to see, to discover the selflessness. So having said that, then these four Buddhist tenets have their own way of asserting what exactly is this apprehension of self, and they have their own assertions as to what exactly is the view of selflessness that is the antidote to the apprehension of a self. And so as you move, you know, through the tenets, you see that the presentation of selflessness becomes increasingly more profound and extensive. The most important thing, the most important kind of understanding, you know, that a Buddhist can, most important understanding that Buddhist can get, and the most important thing, you know, and the concept, you know, to settle, is this view of selflessness. Yeah. What exactly is selflessness? That's the most important concept to to settle and to delineate clearly in your mind what exactly that means. And we talk about the Eightfold Noble Path, yeah. The Eightfold Noble Path, Eightfold Noble Path are usually how that's translated, yeah. In common language, one of which is right view, yeah. So when one gains a correct, and discovers the correct understanding, the meaning of selflessness, I think one can consider this understanding of the selflessness to be a right view. Yeah. And essentially what right view? Right view is basically seeing things as they are, understanding what exactly is the reality, how do things exist. Basically, that's it.
Oh, Tushin, that is that Jason Bushash, that to the jungle, she needs the television, but that she needs the television. That one is Hakuadi, that will be she the candidate to see, but she said, the last Jason was the television, that to the jungle.
This is of crucial importance, yeah. And this is the reason why we, educate ourselves, about, the four Buddhist tenets, and why we have to learn, And the most important thing, the point here is to discover what is reality. What exactly is reality? How do things and events, ourselves and phenomena and events, what is their nature? How do they exist?
这样的大王谁是他等的今天是他西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西西
Why is it so important to have a right view? Which in this case is just seeing, just realizing or understanding things as they are, you know? Right? Understanding things as they are, A for A, B for B, you know? Just realizing the nature of things and phenomena, or what the nature of reality is. Why is this so important? Because if we have a right view, if our understanding of reality is right, then our interaction with reality will be correct, will be valid. The kind of interactions we have with reality will be valid. You know, one of the, on basis of right view, you have right analysis or right thinking or right thought, yeah. Because, you know, you look at our lives, all our problems, you know, our unhappiness, suffering, always comes from misconceptions, distorted, perceptions of reality, we go against reality, isn't it? We have all these wrong concepts. You know? Because we have these wrong concepts, then we suffer, isn't it? But, you know, how do we, if we want to stop problems and suffering, we have to stop these wrong concepts, yeah, misconceptions. And the only way to stop these misconceptions is to gain an exact understanding of how things exist, yeah? Isn't it? So, right view is the basis for right thinking, you know? Right perception of, right, correct interaction with reality, yeah? Isn't
it? What today was in Sara,
So on basis of right view, we have right thought. On the basis of right thinking, then one can have right speech, isn't it? Followed by right speech, also right. Basically, you know, whatever physical and verbal actions that we carry out, you know, will be, you know, realistic and not harmful to others. Because you know, based on right thinking, you know what to say, what not to say. For example, when to say, when not to say. You know, and then then if you have that, then we have right action. Yeah. So right action, you know, we could perhaps, you know, relate right action to basically having living our lives according, you know, to karma. Basically, you know, abandoning non virtue and creating virtue. Which so this comes, all this can only come from right thought, yeah, right perception of reality, which comes from right view. Then right livelihood would also follow naturally. You know, one would lead a one will basically have engaged in right livelihood here, and right effort as well. You know, putting effort in the you know, in correctly and into, you know, yeah. So that will also come about, yeah.
That today is my na, and it's a young type of Tambasini, Tamu Tamba Tembu Yuana Pantashi. Roa, that is, she didn't in this manner, that Tamba Tembu Yuana Kapore. Roa, that young type of Tawa, Topa, Ma, and in the Soa, Soa, in the Asia Vina, that Manasita, Tamba Tembu Yuana, Pantashi. Timena, and some Samasin Chai, Tamba Tubeka, Tamba Tembu Yuana Kapocha.
And then, on the basis of all these, then you know you can have right mindfulness, you know, the correct kind of mindfulness. So without the earlier understandings and realizations, it's not really possible to have right mindfulness. Yeah. Okay, so you see, you start from right view, then you have right thinking or right thought, then you have right speech, right action, right livelihood, then you have right effort. On the basis of all these, then comes right mindfulness, the correct kind of mindfulness. Yeah. So without, you know, the earlier understandings, then, you know, it's not really possible to have, you know, correct mindfulness. You know, your mind will always be like, you know, zzzz, you know, just, yeah.
Oh, today in Zang, that
When we, on the basis of right mindfulness, correct kind of mindfulness, then comes right concentration. And right concentration, the concentration here doesn't refer, you know, mainly, it's not talking about just having some single-pointedness of mind, being able to concentrate. Oh, that's not the point. The right concentration here that is mentioned in this part of the Eightfold Noble Path is the concentration that has selflessness as its object of observation. Now, this is the kind of concentration that we need. The whole point of developing mindfulness is to arrive, be able to develop a single-pointedness of mind, and then having this single-pointedness of mind focusing on the ultimate nature of reality, the selflessness.
Yeah.
So, as mentioned, the goal is not to get single-pointedness of mind for the sake of having single-pointedness of mind. That is the tool. Because, with right concentration, with calm abiding, meditative serenity, focusing on selflessness, then one strives to develop a special insight. And with special insight, then we will finally be able to shake, to disturb, the afflictive emotions, the destructive emotions, yeah. Okay. So this is the distinguishing feature, the hallmark of Buddhist teachings, Buddhism.
Yeah.
So I've mentioned to you a couple of times now that you have to see for yourself, you have to realize for yourself, discover for yourself how extremely important it is to learn, to educate yourself, especially going deeper into the Buddhist teachings. We say literally, we need to study the great treatises, yeah. I mean, great treatises, but what we're doing here, what we're trying to do, to look deeper into the Buddhist teachings, think about it, yeah. Yeah. Because, we say we want to meditate, but when you want to meditate, you must know how to meditate, what you want to meditate, what's the purpose of meditation, yeah. Isn't it? So as I mentioned in the last lesson, the point here is the whole point of learning, and educating ourselves and practicing. One of the most important things is to arrive, to discover for ourselves, what exactly is, how do we exist? How do we exist? How do others exist? How do phenomena exist? What is the ultimate nature? What is the final reality of things and events, and this is one of the most important things, to understand,
right?
So of course, learning about the ultimate nature of reality, like what is presented here in the tenets, of course it's no easy feat, it's not easy. Many conditions must come together, hearing the explanations, reading the text, reading different texts, different commentaries, discussing with your peers, thinking about stuff, all this you have to do in order to to, you know, make, you know, to gain an understanding and then to also to clarify whatever, you know, to increase, you know, our, you know, an understanding of the selflessness, yeah. So if you don't think, you know, if you don't think deep, think on over time, think, you know, and then just studying alone, yeah. Just studying alone, just listening, will not lead you to any understanding. Just listening. No way. So, you know, it's something that requires, you know, to understand, you know, the reality. You know, we need, you know, to analyze. To analyze, you know, to look at the presentation of selflessness from all different angles, you know, using all kinds of different avenues of reasoning, logic, and so forth, you know. And only then we will be able to eliminate, you know, our qualms, you know, our lack of understanding, our doubts, you know. So the proponents of, there are two divisions of proponents of the middle way, isn't it? Right? There are the middle way autonomists. They are called Swatantrikas. Yeah. Swatantrika Madhyamikas. Then you have the middle way consequentialists. Yeah. They are called the Prasangika Madhyamikas. Yeah. So in short, those proponents of middle way, who assert existence by way of their own character, are middle way autonomous. Those proponents of middle way who do not assert existence by way of their own character is a middle way consequentialist. So the thing that differentiates the autonomous from the consequentialist is their belief that things and events, you know, basically everything, you know, exists by way of their own character, isn't it? So what is existence by way of their own, by way of his own character, and what is non-existence by way of his own character? So what is the difference between these two? Yeah, I mean, it's in the chart anyway. Yeah, right. So existence by way of his own character means, you know, that when you search and when you look, you know, for the imputed object, you know, at the end of the day, you'll be able to find it. You'll be able to point to something that is that imputed object. You know. And because the middle way autonomists assert that, you know, all things and events are findable upon analysis. When you look for it, are findable. Such as the person. Therefore, the person and basically all the other phenomena exist by way of their own character. Because, you know, when you look for the I or the person, according to the middle way autonomy, you'll be able to point to something that you say, oh, there, that is, that whatever they point to, there's something that, according to them, ultimately you can, you know, identify, hey, there, that's the person, that's the self. So because, yeah, therefore, everything, according to the middle way autonomy, exists by way of their own character. So, the middle way autonomists assert that all phenomena exist by way of their own character, isn't it? That if you look for the imputed object, you'll be able to find it, yeah. So, which means the person also exists by way of his own character, isn't it? The person can be found if you look for it, no? And at the end of the day, you should be able to point to something. You must be able to point to something that is the person. Yeah, that's what they believe, isn't it? So therefore, the middle way autonomists, you know, because you know, this is the fundamental premise upon which they're working on, isn't it? And, you know, there's something that you can point to that is that very thing. And so when it comes to the I, so therefore, you know, they think. No, what is the I? What's the person? So then they posit, you know, that the mental consciousness is the illustration of the person. So at the end of the day, they say that the person, they do think about it, you know, they eliminate this possibility and that possibility, you know, I mean, through their own thinking, then they say, oh yeah, the mind. You know, if you have to say what the person is, it's the mind, it's the mental consciousness. That is the person. So basically, the middle way autonomists say that if it is an existent, it necessarily exists by way of its own character. Why? Because when you look for the imputed object, you'll definitely be able to point to something that is the object. Therefore, it can be found. So what they're saying is that if it is an existent, you'll be able to find it. You'll be able to find it when you look for it. And if you're not able to find it, when you look for it, the imputed object, if you're not able to find it, that means that, you know, it does not exist at all. If you remember from our discussion in the previous lesson, a proponent of middle way do not assert true existence, isn't it? So a proponent of middle way, which means both the autonomists and consequentialists, both of them are the same in asserting that phenomena do not exist truly. There isn't true existence. Devo.
What 담바르투바 세디 지바시아기요 말에 카가르스고 담바르투바 세다 다른 치밀투바 세디 전다 카가르스다 나 집에 두스겨레 어 타집에 다른 치밀투바 담바르투바 세다 다 곧 다 지바르스 거야시 어 다른 집에 군이 지바 말했다
The middle way, the middle way autonomous say that true existence and existence by way of its own character mean the same thing. No, no, don't mean the same thing. I'm gonna say. Hopefully, it's a sign of a very strong. Prasangika imprint. Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, the middle way autonomies, I mean, middle way autonomies, basically, yeah, they say that, you know, true existence, you know, the meaning of true existence, you know, is not the meaning of existence by way of its own character. Whereas, the middle way, middle way consequentialists, they say that, you know, you know, true existence, existence by way of his own character and what have you. You know, there's just different ways of packaging. You're talking about the same thing. So let's try to understand the meaning of true existence. Yeah. So the middle way autonomists have their own take on what exactly is true existence, and their interpretation ultimately can be traced back to what the Buddha said in the descent into the Lanka Sutra. Lanka means Sri Lanka, but Lanka Shivedu is a short form. So there's in this sutra, in which is called the descent into the Lanka Sutra, the Buddha said that. Suddenly this reminds me of many years ago when I had to translate this and I got a big headache. There's this quotation from the Descent of the Lanka Sutra. So basically the Buddha said that all phenomena exist because all phenomena exist because they appear to consciousness, and on all phenomena, the Buddha said, then all phenomena exist conventionally. Kunso do yoro. So yeah, all phenomena exist through appearing to the consciousness. All phenomena exist conventionally. All phenomena do not exist ultimately. Do not ultimately exist. So the Buddha said that all phenomena exist conventionally. All phenomena do not exist ultimately. And why is it that all phenomena exist conventionally? All phenomena exist conventionally because phenomena exist through the force of that phenomena appearing to a consciousness. So in short, all phenomena are basically how do we posit the existence of phenomena? The existence of phenomena is posited through the force of them appearing to a mind, a consciousness. And for that reason, all phenomena exist conventionally. Right? So all phenomena exist conventionally, the Buddha said. What's the reason for the Buddha saying that? All phenomena exist conventionally because all phenomena are posited to exist through their appearing to a consciousness. Right? So that's the reason why all phenomena exist conventionally and not existing ultimately. For if a phenomenon can exist without being posited through the force of appearing to a consciousness, then that phenomenon would be ultimately existent. So according to, well, it's in the chart again, that long, you know, the thing in the box. So according to the Middle Way Autonomous, if a phenomenon is established by way of its own uncommon mode of existence without being posited through the force of appearing to a non-defective awareness, then that phenomenon exists ultimately. Yes. So, according to the Middle Way Autonomous, this is the meaning of true existence. If there's anything that you can point to that is established by way of its own uncommon mode of existing, as distance from its own side, you know, without being posited, you know, it exists because of its own uncommon way of abiding, you know, and if it's not posited through the force of that phenomenon appearing to not defective awareness, then that phenomenon would be existing ultimately. Yeah, right. Will be truly existent. If the phenomenon exists, if the phenomenon is established by way of its own uncommon mode of existence without being posited through the force of appearing to a non-defective awareness, then that phenomenon would be truly existent. Yeah. Okay. But because, according to the middle way autonomous, there isn't any phenomenon that you can point to that is established by way of its own uncommon mode of existence without being posited through the force of appearing to a non-effective awareness. Because you cannot point to any phenomenon that's like that. Therefore, according to them, phenomenon do not exist ultimately. And therefore, all phenomena has to exist conventionally. Even emptiness.
Okay.
We haven't even started the meeting, you know. We're just looking at the words. Calling. So in the first place, do you understand that for anything to exist, the reason why, according to the middle way autonomous, how do things exist? In order for something to be considered an existent, it has to be something that is appearing to a mind, isn't it? If it doesn't appear to any mind, any consciousness, then you cannot, that all phenomena according to them are posited because they appear to a mind, posited through appearing to a consciousness, yeah? And therefore, it exists, yeah? Tewo, you get that first in the, so far, okay, yeah? Okay? Tige. So the middle way autonomists assert that in order for something to exist, it has to be posited by mind. And posited by mind here means that phenomenon must appear to a mind. So because it appears, therefore the phenomenon can be posited and therefore it is an existent, yeah. But on top of that, the middle way autonomists assert that there must be something also from the side of the object. There must be existence on its own side. These two collectively account for the existence of any given phenomenon. Basically, in short, for anything to exist, basically is 50-50. It must appear to a mind, but there's also existence from the side of the object. There's something coming from the side of the object. Oh, these two come together, that's how things exist. Tewo.
Huh?
So the midway autonomists do not accept that there is establishment by way. Yeah, the midway autonomists do not accept that phenomena are established by way of their own uncommon mode of existence without being posited through the force of appearing the non-defective awareness. Yeah, they do not accept that. So going back to the quotation from the Descent of the Lanka Sutra, then all phenomena all phenomena exist because they are posited through the force of appearing to a mind, isn't it, right? Appearing to a mind, isn't it? So if phenomena exist, then they have to be, they must appear to a mind, basically. Yeah. That's how we can posit that phenomena, and therefore it makes it an existence. Yeah. So it must appear to a mind. But what exactly is this mind? What constitutes this mind? Oh, the middleway autonomous and the middleway consequentialist have a different understanding or different assertion as to what this mind is. What is this mind that a phenomena, if a phenomena appears to it, then it can be considered an existence. Oh, there's a difference, yeah, between the autonomous and the consequentialist. So according to the middleway autonomous, this particular mind has to be a non-defective awareness. And in what way is a non-defective awareness non-defective? It is non-defective. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with that particular mind existing by way of his own character.
What's the
Huh?
You understood what I just said? Huh? Sometimes I think people understand what I say, but sometimes I don't understand what I say. Sometimes, as long as you understand what I say, it doesn't matter whether I understand what I say, right? No? So, yeah, here according to the midway autonomous, yeah. So, they assert that, the mind that, because, the Descent of Lanka Sutra, the quotation, you have to remember that, and that's the basis, yeah. the phenomenon are posited through them appearing to a mind, isn't it? So what is this mind? It cannot be referring to any mind, right? Or you can interpret it in different ways. So what is the autonomy middle way schools take on this? They say that this mind has to be a non-defective awareness. But what exactly is a non-defective awareness? What is the meaning of non-defective awareness? How is a non-defective awareness non-defective? It is non-defective. What exactly about it is non-defective? The factor of it existing by way of its own character is non-defective, because that cannot be harmed by reason. Because according to them, anything and everything that exists, exists by way of its own character. So, therefore, according to the middle way autonomies, anything, if it is an existence, that phenomenon is necessarily posited through the force of it appearing to a non-defective awareness. If whatever basis in question, if that object or the basis, is not posited through the force of appearing to non-defective awareness, then that basis is a non-existent. So the middle way autonomies are also divided into two. Sutra middle way autonomies and yogi middle way autonomies. So there are two divisions of the autonomies here. You have the Sutra middle way autonomies, or in Sanskrit it's Sautantrika, Swatantrika, Madhyamikas. And then you have the yogic middle way autonomies, which is the Yogacara, Swatantrika, Madhyamika. So the definition of a sutra middle way autonomist is a proponent of the middle way who propounds a presentation of conventionalities through mostly conforming with the proponents of sutra. And the definition of a yogic middle way autonomist is a proponent of the middle way who propounds a presentation of conventionalities through mostly conforming with the proponents of mind only. You see, in the definition of these two, the words mostly conforming. Mostly conforming means most of the time, but not all the time. So, according to the autonomies, existence by way of its own character, existence from its own side, and inherent existence are mutually inclusive. Uncompounded space, true cessations, past and future, and subtle selflessness of persons are both non-affirming negatives and conventional truths. Ultimate truth suchness and the subtle selflessness of phenomena are mutually inclusive. So here you see there's a difference in the autonomous presentation of the two truths. Yeah, which there's a difference between the presentation of the two truths in according to the autonomous and the mind only. So in the mind only school, emptiness is an ultimate truth, emptiness is ultimate truth. But in the mind only school, the subtle selflessness of persons is an ultimate truth in the mind only school. But in the according to the autonomy, according to the middle way autonomous, the subtle selflessness of persons is the conventional truth. Right? Subtle selflessness of person, according to the autonomous, is a conventional truth. In the mind only, it is an ultimate truth. And according to the autonomy school, the subtle selflessness of persons is an ultimate truth. Yeah, and the subtle selflessness of person, of course, here referring to the emptiness of true existence.
독신 자자 딱 갑대 딱 던던 대바스나 또 동반이 던던 대바스나 추기 다음에 탐오스나 집발아 고해 딱 동반이 세디 덴버디베 동아 집불아 고해 신발에 봐 반지불 딱 때나 내 딱 가서라 이제 집에 세기 동아스나 딱 동반이 말해 던던 대가 말해 딱 로틀라 독성해 말해
So according to autonomy school, ultimate truth, emptiness, mutually inclusive. But the emptiness here is the selflessness of phenomena, the emptiness of true existence. Yeah. Which means that according to the autonomy midway school, the subtle selflessness of persons is not an emptiness. The definitions of the two truths conventional truth and ultimate truth is not given in this root text for the autonomy on the autonomy school. But in short, it's pretty much the same. Pretty much the same as the mind only school. Page 1 of your chart.
Lord
So you know, according to the autonomy, according to the autonomist, what you know, the ultimate truth. You know, the ultimate truth is the that it is a truth for the ultimate awareness. So ultimate truth now, ultimate here, you can read it as the ultimate awareness. Yeah. And ultimate awareness here refers to the meditative equipoise of a superior being, which is the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness. Yeah. And yeah. So tun tam tamba. We talked about this before, remember? You cannot glean this completely from the English word ultimate truth. Yeah. But then you have tundam demba, which is ultimate truth, translated as ultimate truth in English. Tamba means so you have tundam demba. Yeah. Tun is literally means object. Tam is the short for tamba, which means holy, ultimate. You know, so tam. Tamba in this context refers to the ultimate awareness, the meditative equipoise of a superior being. Yeah? And turn here is the object. And object here is emptiness. So anyway, simply speaking, I mean, emptiness is our ultimate truth here. Yeah? Emptiness is ultimate truth. So all phenomena other than emptiness are conventional truths. So all phenomena other than emptiness are conventional truths. Emptiness is an ultimate truth. Yeah. Although emptiness is an ultimate truth, emptiness does not exist ultimately. Why? Because emptiness exists conventionally. Why does emptiness exist conventionally? Because it is posited through the force of appearing to a mind. So according to the autonomous middle school, if it is an existent, it is necessarily not ultimately existent. If it is an existent, it necessarily exists conventionally. So sometimes you have to make a distinction between emptiness being an ultimate truth, being an ultimate, and not being ultimately existent. There is a difference. Yeah. Although emptiness is an ultimate, it is an ultimate truth, but it is not. It doesn't exist ultimately.
So
Although emptiness is an ultimate truth, emptiness does not exist ultimately. But you have to know why emptiness does not exist ultimately. Ultimate truth does not exist ultimately. Why? Because everything that exists, which includes emptiness, have to exist conventionally, isn't it? Right? Because according to the autonomy, there is nothing that can exist without being posited through the force of appearing to a mind. Right? So, and if it is posited through the force of appearing to a mind, that means it exists conventionally. It's not, it doesn't exist ultimately. Then the Sautantrika, Swatantrika, Madhyamikas assert that the five sense objects, forms and so forth, are different entities from consciousness, and that they are gross external objects composed of partless particles. Then the Yogacara, Swatantrika, Madhyamikas assert that the five sense objects, forms and so forth, are one entity with the consciousness apprehending them. Okay, I think I just assume that you understand these two paragraphs, and then we'll move on. So according the middle way autonomists assert that the mental consciousness is the illustration of the person. They assert a collection of six consciousnesses. There are two types of awareness, valid cognizers and non-valid cognizers. Sounds familiar, right? Okay. Then next one, there are two types of valid cognizers, direct valid cognizers and inferential valid cognizers. So far, so good, right? Then the Sautantrika, Swatantrika, Madhyamikas do not assert self-knowing direct perceivers, SKDP. Sounds familiar, also, right? Next. The Yogacara, Swatantrika, Mahadimikas assert all four types of direct perceivers. Okay? You know what the four are, right? Self-knowing direct perceivers and yogic direct perceivers, according to the Yogacara, Swatantrika, Mahadimikas, these two are necessarily non-mistaken consciousnesses. While the other two can either be mistaken or non-mistaken. Proponents of sutra, proponents of mind only, and autonomous, all accept that a direct perceiver is necessarily a consciousness free from conceptuality. A subsequent cognizer is necessarily a non-valid cognizer. Okay, so far so good, right? A consciousness that is mistaken with respect to its determined object is necessarily a wrong consciousness. Yeah, determined and engaged object, same. If it is a mistaken consciousness with respect to a phenomenon, if it is a mistaken consciousness with respect to a phenomenon, it is necessarily not a valid cognizer with respect to that phenomenon. If it is an inferential cognizer, it is necessarily not a valid cognizer with respect to its appearing object, and so on. So, because we have already we did look at Lorik in the previous module, yeah. So we talked quite a fair bit on all these points, yeah. So there's no need to repeat them. Next, the person being empty or being permanent, unitary and independent is asserted to be a coarse selflessness of persons, while the person being empty or being self-sufficient, substantially existent is a subtle selflessness of persons. Okay, same, yeah. Then the Yogacara Swatantrika Madhyamikas assert that a form and the cognizer apprehending that form, being empty or being different substances, is a coarse selflessness of phenomena. Whereas the all phenomena being empty of true existence is asserted to be the subtle selflessness of phenomena. The two selflessnesses are differentiated by way of the object of negation and not by way of the basis of the emptiness. Because the refutation of the object of negation, true existence, upon the basis of a person is the subtle selflessness of phenomena, while the refutation of a self-sufficient substantial existence upon the basis of a person is the subtle selflessness of persons. Okay? The two conceptions of self are differentiated by way of the mode of apprehension and not by way of the observed object. Because through observing the basis, the person, and apprehending it to be truly existence is a conception of a self of phenomena, and through observing the basis, the same basis, the person, and apprehending it to be self-sufficient, substantially existent, is a conception of a self of persons. So then the presentation of the grounds and paths will be... We will do it in the next lesson, yeah. So if there's anything that you need clarification about what we've just covered here today.
If it's a mistaken consciousness with respect to phenomena, it's necessary not a very cognizable little bit better.
A non-defective awareness is asserted to be a consciousness that exists by way of its own character because it cannot be harmed by reasoning. So a consciousness that is established by way of its own character, in that sense, covers all types of consciousnesses, including wrong consciousnesses. Is that correct to say that? A non-defective awareness is asserted to be a consciousness that is established by way of its own character, because it cannot be harmed by reasoning. Was that a correct understanding? Therefore, does this mean that since a wrong consciousness is also established by way of its own character, wrong consciousness is also established by way of its own character, therefore a wrong consciousness is also a non-defective awareness? In fact, all consciousnesses that exist are established by way of its own character. Therefore, all consciousnesses are non-defective awareness. So, is there a redundancy in saying non-defective?
So, the non-defective awareness cannot refer to every mind. It specifically refers to a valid cognizer. Because we cannot talk about you know, an eye consciousness. You know, for example, the mirage appear to eye consciousness. Just because the mirage appear to eye consciousness, and therefore, you know, we cannot say that. Therefore, you know, then the mirage is said to exist, posit to exist. No, but there has to be basically a not effective awareness. Besides that part of it, you know, the explanation of, you know, earlier about how. What non-defective means, but it refers specifically to valid cognizer. So, the phenomena are posited through the force of them appearing to a non-defective awareness. Because this phenomenon appears to non-defective awareness, therefore we say that they exist, right? So basically the positor here is the mind to which the phenomenon is appearing to, right? And it is a non-defective awareness. But we cannot say that this non-defective awareness means all kinds of minds. No. Specifically, it has to be a valid mind. Valid awareness.
Between the mind-only school and autonomy middle way school, both assert that the object exists by way of its own character and relying on a consciousness to impute it for it to exist. So how are the two, how is the autonomy in the way school more subtler in this aspect to the mind-only school?
In the mind-only school, although they assert that phenomena in the entity, in the nature of mind, but at the same time they assert that they are truly existent or truly established phenomena, such as the mind itself. So although they do not assert external objects, but they do assert true existence, my only school, and the phenomena that are truly existent, such as the mind itself. So then, do you need a method to deal with the destructive emotions such as anger or attachment that has the mind as their focus? So there's, just the concept of there being no external objects, that very concept cannot harm the attachment to, let's say, mental sensations, mental feelings, isn't it? Pleasurable feelings, for example. Because mental sensations, pleasurable feelings, for example, these are real, truly existent, no? So in this case, so asserting that the mind is truly established, truly existent, cannot help, in dealing with the attachment to the mind, to pleasurable sensations, for example. Whereas, understanding that the mind is not truly existent, even the mind is not truly existent, that helps, So, basically, the autonomous, the autonomous position is more powerful because, unlike the mind-only school, the mind-only school, is a worldview that everything is in the entity of mind. It's helpful in dealing with attachment to objects other than mind, isn't it? But ultimately, they think that the mind is truly existent, and therefore they still apprehend a truly existent mind, isn't it? And therefore afflictions based on that can arise. Yeah? But the autonomy middle way school not only assert that phenomena other than mind are not truly existent, they also assert that the mind itself is also not truly existent. It's much more powerful, yeah. So the autonomy is basically, you know, they also explain how the mind do not exist in the way it appears to us, although it appears as truly existent, but that's not how it exists. Yeah, yeah. But of course, the most profound explanation about emptiness of true existence comes only in the consequence of middle way school. Yeah. So it's the consequence of middle way school's presentation that is the most profound, because they say that every phenomena are merely all phenomena exist is merely imputed by thought, imputed by mind, imputed by basically phenomena exist as in mere name. So yeah, I mean, you can actually see and feel that there's a difference between the Mayoni school's presentation and the middle way's presentation. The middle way being more profound, isn't it, in that, you know, not only phenomena other than mind not truly existent, even the mind itself is not truly existent. So this is more profound, a little bit more deeper than the mind only school, yeah. But then within the middle way school, then you have these two schools, divisions, in the autonomies and the consequentialies, you know, we haven't even started, you know. I don't know, but if you think about it, you know, of course there must be a difference between these two, yeah. But as to what the difference is, no, this is something which is much more difficult to distinguish, yeah, in understanding and in experience, no, these two, yeah.
Did I answer your question? In another way, not directly, but indirectly. No. Okay.
Kami Bushi, in my own school, right, we pronounce the death of thoughtless particles. So now how did the autonomy middle way school that follow the Sutra Autonomy Middle Way School bring back the proved existence of partless particles, and then although it is a partless particle, but in this school, it is a partless particle that is not a true existence. How do they prove that?
Ask again, make shorter question.
What is a partless particle that is not truly existent?
Is there a question?
And in my own school, they have proven the non-existence of external object by proving there's no such thing as a directionally partless particle. And now here we have the higher school assert there's a partless particle. So how do they again prove that there's a partless particle? How do they overcome my own school assertion to prove non-existence of a partless particle in order to assert there's external object?
So, I mean, what you just said is an assertion of the sutra. Swatantrika Manimika's assertion. Yeah. Remember, it's mostly conforming. Right? It's conforming with the sutra school. Yeah, and we.